This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hi, this is Joe Lipari for the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. We're reading from the latest issue of Science News. The articles we'll be reading today include The Largest 3D Map of the Universe Reveals Hints of Dark Energy's Secrets. Another article is entitled, Bird Flu Has Infected a Person After Spreading to Cows. Here's What to Know. And a third article is, On the Move Examines How Climate Change Will Alter Where People Live. And if we have time, we'll read other articles as well. So our first article is entitled, The Largest 3D Map of the Universe Reveals Hints of Dark Energy's Secrets. Dark energy might evolve over time, results from a major cosmic survey suggest. This article is written by Emily Conover and is dated April 4th, 2024. It begins, A massive survey of the cosmos is revealing new details of one of the most mysterious facets of the universe, dark energy. Intriguingly, when combined with other observations, the data hint that dark energy, commonly thought to maintain a constant density over time, might evolve along with the cosmos. The result is, quote, an adrenaline shot to the cosmology community, unquote, says physicist Daniel Skolnick of Duke University, who is not involved with the new study. Dark energy, an invisible enigma that causes the universe's expansion to speed up over time, is poorly understood, despite making the bulk of the universe's contents. To explore that puzzle, the dark energy spectroscopic instrument, DESI, has produced the largest 3D map of the universe to date. Researchers report April 4 and 10 papers posted on the DESI website, and in talks at a meeting of the American Physical Society held in Sacramento, California. By analyzing patterns in the distributions of galaxies and other objects on the map, scientists can determine the history of how the universe expanded over time. Although consistent with the cosmologist's standard picture of the universe, the data also allow for the possibility that dark energy's equation of state may describe how the pressure of dark energy relates to its density, might vary over time. That would mean an upheaval in the way scientists understand the universe's history. The study analyzes the project's first year of data, mapping out the locations of 6.4 million galaxies and quasars, the ultra-bright cores of violently active galaxies. This map allows scientists to estimate the rate of expansion of the universe thanks to a handy-sized reference present in the universe. Sound waves in the early universe set up patterns in the density of matter in the universe known as baryon acoustic oscillations. As galaxies form, those density variations persist, with the results that galaxies are more likely to be separated from one another by a preferred distance. That distance acts like a ruler, which is stretched by the expansion of the universe. Measuring the size of that ruler over its various areas of the cosmos can show how the universe expanded. The scientists divided the universe into seven epochs, stretching back in time as far as 11 billion years, and measured its expansion over time. The more recent time slices corresponded to different types of galaxies. Looking back further in the universe's history, the light from galaxies became too faint, so scientists turned to distant quasars and to measurements of how hydrogen gas absorbs the quasar's light. DESI scientists then compared their data to the standard cosmological theory known as Lambda CDM, in which dark energy's density is assumed to be constant over time. The data matched that Lambda CDM picture well, But the research didn't stop there. They considered a theory in which dark energy's behavior, namely its equation of state, is allowed to vary over time. On its own, the DESI data couldn't precisely determine how dark energy evolved, so the team combined their data with studies of supernovas, exploding stars, to improve the estimate. That combined data fit better to an evolving dark energy than to one that was unchanging. Depending on the set of supernova data the researchers used, the significance of that effect was more than 3 sigma. In physics, 5 sigma is considered the gold standard for discovery. 3 sigma is considered an intriguing hint. Quote, it's definitely not a discovery level, but it's definitely like, this is exciting, unquote, Skolnick says. Quote, it's not nearly as vanilla as I think people might have been expecting, unquote. More data may help clarify the situation. Quote, we have a lot more data to come that will really tell us if the hints we are seeing are confirmed, unquote, says DESI physicist Natalie Palenque de Bruyere of Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in California. DESI scientists will collect 5 years of data eventually, cataloging 3 million quasars and 37 million galaxies. These initial results demonstrate that DESI scientists are on their way. With more data, says astrophysicist Michael Wood Vasey of the University of Pittsburgh, quote, they really can achieve the goals they set out of trying to figure out what the dark energy is, trying to figure out if there is some deviation from lambda CDM, unquote. However, at the moment, he's unfazed by the potential hints of new physics. Quote, I'm a little conservative, so I don't get too deeply excited about hints about stuff, unquote. Cosmology is already beset with controversy over measurements of the Hubble constant, the current rate of the universe's expansion. Different ways of measuring that number produce results that clash. DESI's measurements don't resolve the Hubble constant tension, but if scientists move away from their standard lambda CDM model, that could change the Hubble constant situation. That's because the tension is based on the assumption that the lambda CDM model is correct, says DESI collaborator Dylan Sprout, a physicist at Boston University. Quote, this would potentially blow the Hubble tension wide open, unquote. The article's author, Emily Conover, is a physics writer who has a PhD in physics from the University of Chicago. She's a two-time winner of the DC Science Writers Association News Brief Award. So our next article from Science News is entitled, Bird Flu Has Infected a Person After Spreading to Cows. Here's what to know. The risk of H5N1 to people remains low, the CDC says. This article was written by Aaron Garcia de Jesus and is dated April 3, 2024. It begins, a strain of avian influenza that has likely sickened and killed millions of birds around the globe has popped up in an unexpected species, cows. On April 1, the U.S. Department of Agriculture confirmed that cattle on a farm in New Mexico had tested positive for a strain of bird flu called H5N1. The news followed a March 25 announcement that officials had detected the virus on 2 dairy farms in Kansas and 2 Texas farms. The virus was also detected in a Michigan herd that had recently received cows from Texas, the USDA reported on March 29th. 5 additional herds in Texas have tested positive, and an outbreak in Idaho is presumed to have been caused by H5N1. A person exposed to cattle on one of those Texas farms has tested positive too, becoming only the second person in the United States ever documented to be infected with H5N1, the U.S. Senators for Disease Control and Prevention reported April 1. The individual is being treated with an antiviral drug for a single symptom, eye redness. It is unclear how the cows were infected, although consuming wild bird excrement is a possibility. The person was probably infected while in close contact with the cows. Most people fall ill with H5N1 only after close contact with infected animals, typically poultry, and these infections can be mild to deadly. Right now, the CDC considers H5N1's risk to people to be low, but milk from infected cows should be thrown out before reaching our food supply, the USDA says. Pasteurization would also kill the virus, so it should not spread through the country's milk, the agency said. While less concerning for humans at the moment, the virus is particularly lethal for poultry, resulting in the culling of millions of farmed birds, and it has also proved dangerous for a myriad other animals since it began sweeping around the globe in 2021. In addition to killing wild birds, the virus has occasionally popped up in mammals, including seals, sea lions, foxes, raccoons, and bears. Now cows have joined the list, showing symptoms such as reduced milk supply and decreased appetite. Quote, cows were not high on the list of animals that could get infected, unquote, says virologist Andrew Pekosh. Quote, but polar bears were probably not high on the list a few years ago, and we've seen a number of polar bear infections, unquote. To understand what it means that bird flu has jumped to yet another new animal species, Science News spoke with Pekosh of Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. This conversation has been edited for length and clarity. Science News, what have you been keeping an eye on during the bird flu outbreak? Pekosh, since around 2022, H5N1 outbreaks have really increased in terms of their size and in the number of bird species that are being infected. That was always worrying scientists because those kinds of massive increases in numbers of infected waterfowl eventually means that that there's going to be a greater chance of that virus spilling over into other animal species. In fact, we've been seeing that consistently across the globe. A number of different animals have been infected with H5N1. We don't have real strong evidence that H5N1 has been transmitted between mammals, but that's really the critical thing that scientists have been looking for. That would be a real warning bell if we saw mammal-to-mammal transmission. Science News. What does it mean that the virus appears to be infecting cows and that one person got sick? Pekosh. The most recent human case of H5N1, while rare, is probably not surprising to scientists. It sounds like this individual was in close contact with an infected cow and ended up contracting the virus as conjunctivitis, an infection of the eye, which is something that's fairly common with avian influenza viruses when they infect humans or other mammals. The real issue right now is whether there is a common source of that all these cows are getting infected with, or whether there is transmission among the cows at the farms. There's been some reports of movement of some of these cows to other farms and detection of infected cows in those other farms. It's not clear to me yet whether an infected cow that moved was subsequently diagnosed with the bird flu or whether there was transmission at the new farms. If there has been transmission from cow to cow, that's something that would be quite worrisome to us. Science News, what kind of threat might the virus pose for people? Pekosh, this virus changes over time, but it's never really gone away as a threat. It keeps infecting birds very effectively. It keeps spilling onto into other mammals occasionally. Those are warning signs for a virus that might potentially be able to make the jump into humans and to be able to transmit. This virus continues to be high on the high priority list in terms of viruses to watch, because it keeps doing the things that we know to expect from a virus that's making the jump into humans. Anytime a virus like this gets into a farm setting, you have conditions that might make it right for a virus to spread. Cows are usually kept fairly close together in indoor spaces for large periods of time. Those kinds of conditions are ripe for the spread of viruses. Every time you get an infection in a mammal, there's a slightly greater chance that the virus will mutate in ways that help it better replicate in mammals. It's really one of those times when farmers could probably take stock of some of their biosecurity measures to try and understand if their animals are getting exposed to migratory wild waterfowl, and if there are ways that they can minimize that chance of exposure. This article is written by Erin Garcia de Jesus, who is a staff writer at Science News. She holds a PhD in microbiology from the University of Washington and a master's in science communication from the University of California, Santa Cruz. Our next article is entitled On the Move, examines how climate change will alter where people live. Abram Lustgarten zooms in on how global warming will affect the United States. This article was written by Saima Siddiq and is dated April 3rd, 2024. It's a review of the book On the Move by Abram Lustgarten. Ellen Hertel's nerves were nearing a breaking point. The 40-something lifelong Californian had noticed her home was increasingly threatened by wildfires. After relatives lost their house to a blaze, and the constant threat traumatized her 9-year-old daughter, Hertel found herself up at 3 a.m. one night in 2020, searching Zillow for homes in Vermont. She's not alone. Across the United States, people facing extreme fires, storms, floods, and heat are looking for the escape hatch. In On the Move, Abram Lustgarten examines who these people are, where they live, where the climate change may cause them to move, and how this reshuffling will impact the country. At about 300 pages, the book is a relatively quick read, but Lustgarten's reporting is deep. Leaning on interviews with such high-profile sources as former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and unpublished research, Lustgarten explains the scientific and political sides of climate migration. Anecdotes from people across the socioeconomic spectrum reveal the mindsets of people at the front lines of the climate crisis, and the author's decades of experience as a climate journalist result in a particularly accessible analysis of the insurance landscape, which has long lent a false sense of economic safety to people living in places vulnerable to climate change. Where will climate migrants end up? Lustgarten looks to scientists and economists for answers. Ecologist Martin Scheffler, for example, has repurposed tools for predicting where plants will thrive to identify zones that humans will find most habitable in the future. But the book offers no list of the best places to live, as quote-unquote safe climate is only one consideration. Other necessities and comforts will also be factors, and some people won't have the resources to move to an optimal spot. Like Hertel, Lustgarten is a Californian who has watched his state burn. Will he or Hertel leave? To find out, you'll have to read the book. Since we have time, we'll read from another article entitled How a 19th Century Astronomer Can Help You Watch the Total Solar Eclipse. Maria Mitchell's observations remain relevant today. There's a sidebar included which is labeled Viewing Tips, Darkening Sky, Who can see it? Anyone, even if it's cloudy. Equipment needed to view? None, but don't look directly at the sun without solar-filtered glasses. Notes, the sky will be darker the closer you are to the path of totality. 360-degree sunset. Who can see it? Observable in locations close to totality. Equipment needed to view? None, but don't look directly at the sun without solar-filtered glasses. Notes, the spectrum of colors will look different depending on the direction from which you view the eclipse. So the rest, another part of the article is entitled, Look for Signs of Totality. Although a large swath of North America will have a partial eclipse on April 8th, only a small band will see totality when the moon fully covers the sun. Quote, the moon, although so much smaller than the sun, is so near to us that it usually appears of about the same size, and at the time of a total eclipse seems larger and more than covers the sun, unquote, Mitchell wrote in 1869. She traveled to the path of totality frequently during her lifetime to observe phenomena that are visible only during totality. One such effect is Bailey's beads, which appears just before and just after totality. Quote, as the moon moved on from its initial contact, the crescent sun became a narrower and narrower golden curve of light, and it seemed to break up into brilliant lines and points, unquote. Mitchell wrote in 1869, when the moon reaches the apparent edge of the sun, lunar mountains and valleys scatter the remaining sunlight around them, causing the crescent to appear as beads of light. It is at this moment, when the sun is completely blocked, and only then, that it is safe to remove protective glasses. Quote, each observer at the telescopes gave a furtive glance at the unsunlike sun, moved the dark eye piece from the instrument, replaced it by a more powerful white glass, and prepared to see all that could be seen in 2 minutes, 40 seconds of totality, unquote. At this point, observers can see the most coveted elements of the total solar eclipse, the sun's corona and chromosphere. The corona's appearance varies from eclipse to eclipse because the sun's atmosphere is highly dynamic. During an 1869 eclipse, Mitchell noted, quote, the corona burst out all around the sun, so intensely bright near the sun that the eye could scarcely bear it, extending less dazzlingly bright around the sun for the space of about half the sun's diameter, and in some directions, sending off streamers for millions of miles. The corona is normally not visible, Hubble says, because, quote, the disk of the sun is so bright and the corona is a million times dimmer, unquote. In between the sun's surface and the corona lies the chromosphere, Hubble says. Quote, going from the solar surface to the corona, you have the chromosphere, which is a very dense, and it has a reddish, pinkish hue, unquote. During totality, quote, you see like a little red rim around the sun, unquote. Today we know that the chromosphere is the cooler inner atmosphere of the sun, but in Mitchell's time, it was newly discovered and not well understood. Quote, the corona is mentioned by all the observers of the 1806 eclipse, but there is no notice of rosy protuberances, unquote, Mitchell wrote. Those rosy protuberances, quote unquote, weren't mentioned by eclipse watchers until 1842, according to Mitchell. She observed the chromosphere in the 1869 eclipse. Quote, the rosy prominences were so many, so brilliant, so fantastic, so weirdly changing, that the eye must follow them, unquote. Totality lasts only a short time. During this year's event, it will last a maximum of 4 minutes and 28 seconds. Mitchell noted that as soon as the sun began to reappear after totality, that, quote, all nature rejoiced, and much as we needed more time, we rejoiced with nature and felt that we loved the light, unquote. There's a sidebar entitled Viewing Tips, Bailey's Beads, Who Can See It, observable just before and just after totality if you are in the path of totality. Equipment needed to view, solar filtered glasses. Notes none. The corona and the chromosphere, who can see it, observable only during totality. Equipment needed to view, best viewed with a telescope, but can be seen with the naked eye with solar filtered without solar filtered glasses. Notes, check the precise time for totality at your location to know when it is safe to take off your glasses. Well, that's all we have time for today, although the article in the Science News goes on. This has been Joe LaPari for the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Have a great day.